What is up, everybody, and welcome into the Locked On Nuggets podcast, part of the Locked On NBA Network. I'm your host, Adam Mades from DNVR, and I'm joined by my co-host, senior NBA writer from the Action Network, Matt Moore. How's it going, Matt?
It's good. I miss the NBA. It's a weird time between the surreality of where we're of the time that we're living in and the big concerns that are on everybody's mind about what's going to happen in the future, and nobody really knows. And I really get thinking about how the uncertainty was the most, like, the worst part of it for people's mental health, which makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, totally.
But there have been times of me genuinely just like, I was thinking the other day, I was like, man, I just wish I was going to a Nuggets game. Like, I just, like, yeah. I haven't gotten to talk about this part of it in any sort of medium. The thing I think that I'm most sad about in the event that the season doesn't resume, which is definitely possible at this point.
Yeah.
The summer 2020 Olympics in July are now like on the very precipice of being canceled.
Yeah. Canceled or pushed back? I think they'll get pushed back first and then maybe canceled depending on what happens. Yeah.
It's hard to have the summer Olympics in December.
Oh God.
But you know, one of the things that I've been thinking a lot about is like this being a lost year, because if you're an NBA player, your prime lasts about 10 years. Like LeBron James's prime was really probably 2007.
That was his prime?
He's still an MVP candidate and past his prime, which is a testament to how insane he is.
Oh, you're probably saying that was the beginning of his prime was 2007. I got you.
I'll say 09. I'll say the beginning of his prime was 09 through 2000 and probably 18.
Yeah. He was, yeah, you're right, because he was just so good that in 2007 he was an MVP candidate, but he wasn't in his prime yet.
Yeah, and now he's an MVP candidate and he's not in his prime
right.
anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
But like, so you only have like about 10 years of your prime, and you only have so many chances, and like those early years are really valuable for the lessons that you learn. And so like, Luka Doncic and Giannis Antetokounmpo, who had a really good shot at winning a title this year, and Nikola Jokic, you know, like, who knows how long we're going to have with Joker. We were always joking about how he's just going to retire one day. But, you know, I mean, this really brings into stark perspective, just like, look, this stuff could end. Like, stuff could just end at any point. And
I've been thinking a lot about Michael Porter and just thinking, you know, I've always said from 18 to 23, 24, that's like your most important developmental years. And now, you know, he missed two of those, 18, 19, 20. Basically, he didn't play basketball with back injuries. Then this year, you know, he rides the bench for a lot, and then the season gets canceled. I mean, it's I hate to say it, but I'm looking at this and I'm going, man, he really is punting on almost on a majority of 3 years of these important developmental years. It's starting to make me, you know, almost concerned for the guy.
Well, the good news is he's still like 7 years younger than Taj Gibson was when he came in the league. So at least the floor is pretty high. But yeah, just like the opportunity and like all the moments that we're likely to miss out on. People have asked me, like, do you think the season's going to be canceled? And I've just said the same thing. It's just like, I don't know.
Can we talk about that? Because you always haven't. And people have heard my perspective on it. I've been pretty pessimistic about the league coming back. It sounds like Adam Silver in his most recent comments, including with Rachel Nichols, they are putting every option on the table to save this season. I mean, they would literally go to the Big Three style, Big Brother house where everybody goes in there just to play, just to have the season. It's such a high priority that they finish this season and have some sort of conclusion. But who knows what that looks like? What's kind of your prediction on how this shakes out?
I think a lot of it's going to be determined by the next 30 days. So I think that I don't think we'll be in limbo forever. I think we'll know by like May 1st if the curve has flattened.
Right.
Or
maybe sooner than that, to be honest.
Yeah. Or if it's continuing to just be so rampant. But I mean, the thing is like, we're going to see such an acceleration of cases because testing is going to increase. Like, you know, resources were not put towards this in by certain people with certain abilities to do so in a timely fashion or an appropriate fashion. But now you're seeing not only the health sector, you're seeing the technology sector, you're seeing the humanitarian sector, You're saying the government sector by both a local, state, and national level starting to really start driving all resources towards containment, treatment, and testing. And the further we get there, the higher our chances are of achieving a state where things have stabilized to where the league feels like it can accomplish that. The cases that are currently out there are definitely like, that's part of the, you know, difficult part of this equation, right? Is like, how long is it going to take various people to like feel like, how long is it going to take Rudy Gobert to feel like himself?
Well, that's the thing I've been thinking. I wasn't thinking about a week ago because this story, Matt, is obviously it's evolving. And when it first came out as, oh, it doesn't affect young people, it's only old people. And of course, now a week later, we kind of know that's not completely true. There's a lot more sort of, you know, variance in how it affects different people. But one of the things, some of the things I've been reading is that it for some people, including, you know, world-class athletes, it's kind of been like when Wancho got mono, and it's one of those things that it's really wrecked their bodies, where it's not like, oh, it lasted a month and then you bounce back. It's like, no, the damage you do in that month takes a year to get back to where you were. So we might, some of these athletes that I think we're kind of dismissing, like, oh, they'll be fine, they said the symptoms are fine, maybe that's the case for most or some, or but maybe not all of them.
But I mean, if one team has a key guy,
yeah,
and they're like, look, our guy still can't, our guy's lung capacity is still 80% of what it was.
Yeah.
You know, like, we're not going to Denver to play in altitude. Like, that's not happening.
Right.
Like, these things are, this is part of the equation. What I do think, though, this has been like part of the whole thing is the league is first and foremost concerned about everybody's safety, and it had to be. Like, it wasn't until it had to be, and then Rudy got sick, and then that was it. They had to care about, like, that's when they had to put that first. Once it got to their door, they tried to make money until it got to their door, and then it was at their door, and then it was inside the house, and that was it. However, they are going to use this as an opportunity to explore all of the changes. Like, I don't necessarily think that Adam Silver is in any way bound to tradition. I don't think he's bound to the history of the sport, because I think one of the things he realizes is that there isn't a real great public appreciation of it. And that may not be fair, but like, if we think about it in terms of like, think about how much of a joke it is to raise your division banner. Right?
Yeah.
Like, if you do that, it's kind of considered to be like,
yeah,
like, you're a team that raises the division banner.
Yeah.
And in baseball, that's a big deal.
Yeah. Well, the Rockies have never done it.
Yeah. Like, it's a big deal years. If you win the division. Yeah. But in basketball, it's like looked down on. And between that, Kunin's comments at the meetings at Sloan about pushing the schedule back to start at Christmas and go through August, which I really hope they do not do.
Why do you hope they don't? Because I hope they do.
Because my wife is a no.
So
this
you
is like a genuinely
off.
Serious yeah. thing for me, where my wife's a teacher, and so she's a college professor. She can't take time off. Like, you can't just be like, hey, class is canceled the week of October 3rd. I'm going to the beach or wherever.
Right.
The kids have paid for the class. You have to teach the class. Like, they don't cancel classes in here unless there is a blizzard of biblical proportions or a pandemic.
Yeah.
And so the only time that we have to take vacations is the summer months when she's off and I have, and after July when I get done with free agency. We have basically the mid-July through the end of August is the only window that we have to go do things, right? And so, like, if they change this, that's gone. I'm working full time in the summer. It's going to get real hard for me to do this for a living. Like, it just is. And so, like, that's a personal thing, but it's not one of those things where it's like, it's inconvenient for me. It's like, no. Like, my wife is, like, is in her head working constantly with the kids that she works with. And that's where her focus is. The only time that we have time to spend time on each other is these months out of the year. And I don't want to lose that.
If they did move it back and the season, so it would end in August, wouldn't there be a All-Star break sometime around like Memorial Day?
Maybe. If they did it that way, that might work.
Yeah.
But
and still, it's 1 week. Or
yeah,
whatever.
I think the players are gonna think the same way, which is like, no, I don't want my break to be in the fall. Like, right. I want it to be in the summer when I go to Greece or when I go to the Serbian Islands or I go to wherever.
Yeah,
like it's all, there are places where it's always nice, but they don't want that. Like, they want to like enjoy LA in the summer.
You know what else they enjoy? Those money. And if it turned out, and they and I was listening to a pod. It was actually with David Locke, and he was talking about how. If they did resume, you know, play and had to pick up the league in July, they would get a lot of interesting information about, okay, how well does this track? How are people watching the NBA in July? Because typically speaking, people don't, you know, all your primetime television, all your premier television, those are in the fall and the spring because in the summer people are outside and they're doing things. So maybe the NBA would find out like, oh, this is not economically viable. Nobody's paying attention. Or maybe they'd find out nothing else is on. Everybody wants to watch the NBA in the summer. So I don't know. In the end, like everything, I think it would come down to money. And this might offer them an opportunity if things break right for them to at least find out.
The other thing I'll say is the what I've been told, they have to generate a just ton of cash, which who knows if that's going to be a thing in the future, if we're just going to be trading, you know, cockroaches. But assuming that the economy rebounds.
Cynical, Matt. You've been more cynical maybe than anybody.
I don't think it's cynical, just dark. My general thoughts are just dark. I've been asking people what their Mad Max name is going to be. I'm going to be Decimal.
Well, that works. I could see that.
So, but like... assuming that it bounces back to some capacity, if you can use the tournament to make up for it, et cetera, what I've heard the goal is that eventually they want 57 games. And that would be such a radically better – if you start on
Christmas – they want to reduce it to 57 games?
Yes.
Oh, huh.
If you start at Christmas and you played 57 games, every game would feel like about four times more of an event – you would still be able to keep the same schedule and everything rattles off pretty cleanly. Mm. Like that's like a perfect scenario. But the only way that they're going to do that is they're going to phase it back gradually. So what they may end up doing is like delay the season until Christmas, run a 70 game season
that goes like, into like July
12 games. And then like, see like, okay, wait, with the tournament, we're actually making more money. Let's take it to 65.
Mm.
Like,
yeah,
just, You go from 82 to 75 or 70 to 65 or 60 and then down. And then you get kind of a sense of like what the appropriate number is. But like, I just don't know anybody. I don't know a single person in the world that's like the NBA season is the right number of games. Nobody thinks that. It's just a matter of like nobody wants to give up the money.
Yeah.
So.
And I, as a fan, don't want to give up the game. I always say this to people when they talk about reducing games. I'm always like, you know how bad it is when the Nuggets have 3 days off? It's such a bummer. But that would be the norm. So for me as a fan, I would rather just watch basketball.
But my counter for that would be this season in particular, because I think part of it is like, you know, since George Karl took over through the 2013 team, there was always kind of like you were waiting to see like whether they could do something or like what they were going to do. And like there was a lot of drama and it felt very tenuous. And then the rebuilding years, it was like, no, I want to watch because like I want to see like what's good. Like, or it was like, I don't want to watch any of the games because they're terrible in like 2014 and 15. But then like 2016 is like, no, I want to watch and see like how Jokic develops in 17. And then 18 is like, are they going to make the playoffs? And then last year was obviously super fun. But like watching this year, wouldn't you feel this year like maybe we could lose like a few? Like, don't you kind of feel like, all right, we probably could have done without the Cavs game. Like, we could just not play the Cavs game.
Well, of course, if I get to pick which ones, it makes
right.
sense.
But no, even then, like, any of the games where they won, but the game was awful, right? Like,
yeah,
just like some of those to be like, well, yeah. Okay. Like, maybe. We could do without a few of those.
Maybe. I might be in the minority on this, because I hear a lot of writers say that. I always think about in practice what it's like, and it's Tuesday night, and there's no games on, or there's, you know, three games on, and you're just not interested or whatever, and I'm thinking...
But I think... part of that, though, too, is because we're in a space where when there's three games off, we don't ever have any practice at that, so we don't know how to fill the time.
Oh,
what
that
I think
could
about
be true.
A lot is what I think a lot about. Like I always compare it to football because I know that the NBA will never be the NFL, but I think that you should try and emulate whatever like the best, not model in terms of how the sport is, because there's a lot of problems with the NFL, but like the things about it that you want to strive towards. And one of the things I think you want to strive towards is you get like a week of anticipation before those games, and it's just huge. People are thinking about the matchup and the cornerbacks, and like today we're going to talk about like the linebacker matchup, and like today we're going to talk about, you know, the tight end versus the press coverage. Today we're going to talk about, you know, the run defense versus their screen game and stuff like that. And in the NBA, because we're always just like rattling off, and like you know this from having been in locker rooms and talking to coaches and talking to players, there's no prep time for any of these opponents because they're just like, we're just going to play another dude in 24 hours anyway. So
they walk through. I mean, they literally walk through those in the morning and they go over their assignments. It's always funny when you talk to a player and say, you know, what's the plan tomorrow against Toronto? And they go, I don't know. We'll talk about that tomorrow. Shoot around. You're like, oh, okay. Yeah.
So imagine if we went to fewer games and you did have 2 to 3 days off and you could spend that time being, and like the players would have a little bit more media, you would hope, probably less overall, which might be nice for them. But we could actually be like, okay, in 2 days you're facing this team, like you're facing the Clippers, and like, what's it going to be? And you also wouldn't have situations like that Clippers game where they got blasted, where they just like were not prepared for the level of intensity that that team showed up with. So I think there are all these advantages. I used to be of the mindset of like, I want 82 games. I love how long the season is. I love these lost games in the middle of March and January. Like, I love those games, and that's what I love about the NBA. And as time has gone on, I think a lot of it is that I think the players have become more and more conscious of the meaninglessness. Like, that's one of the issues, is like the league shifted to a place where it was one thing when the public didn't care, but the league and its inside circle did. And then somehow that outside stuff seeped in and really kind of poisoned it. And now the players are like, the players are always like, it's just another game. This game isn't big. It doesn't
mean anything. I do feel like it's shifted over the last decade. Like, we've watched it shift.
Yeah. And so like, we need to get back to a place where it feels like the games have some sense of meaning. They don't need to have as much as the playoffs, but it can't be every playoff game is life or death, which is obviously not true. Cause I also looked up some numbers, and no seed higher than 5 has made the conference finals in like the last 10 years. Like, this is a problem. In terms of like of predictability,
right?
So like, if we know that there's like the first round doesn't even matter, so you're talking about like what NBA basketball matters.
It matters for the upsets. It matters for the side stories. I mean, Denver was a classic example of this over the last few years, and probably even this year, where it was like, man, if they can win that first round, maybe the first two, but you knew they weren't going any further than that. So it was just kind of like, you set this false championship,
right? And so, you know, I'm also, they've talked about best of 5. I brought this up. Two people inside the league told me this. I wrote about it on Action. If they are able to have the playoffs this year, but they're on a truncated schedule, I think they should have best of 3 in the first round.
Man, best of 3.
I think it'd be so much fun. And I know it's nightmarish for the Nuggets.
It's
literally the worst thing for Denver. Because like, Luka gets hot, steals game 1, and you're boned, right?
Yeah, like, I'm not for the game best of 3. I like that the NBA finds the right champion. I like that.
I know you like it. I think a lot of it is what we've said is like, but I like that they have like the most legit champion. The problem is like, the fans of the game really like it. And so the question is like, do you want that, or do you want it to be as popular as it can be? Now, I'm with you in the idea of like, I don't want it to be as popular as it can be.
Yeah.
I want it to be mine, right? I'm okay with
that. And it's honestly popular enough, right? I mean, sometimes we're always trying to fix a problem that's not there. It's like, guys, the NBA was doing great before this pandemic.
But I will say, like, I do believe that a higher level of chaos would be a welcome addition. I think we would do better.
To me, this sounds like when I talk about making soccer goals bigger, you know, or taking guys off the field in hockey, or off the ice in hockey or something, where it's like, people that actually like the sport are like, dude, come on. And I'm like, yeah, but for me, it would be more fun.
Right.
And it's like, well, who are you trying to appeal to? The people that actually like this sport, or the people that, you know, you shouldn't ask me how to improve soccer, because it shouldn't be my call.
See, I'm somebody that does love the NBA, and I'm for this idea. And the biggest reason is like, here's why. Is like, it's game 1. Okay.
Okay.
It's Staples. The Lakers got out to a 15-point lead. They were cruising. Mike Breen and Mark Jackson and Jeff Van Gundy are talking about how terrible the sport is. And then all of a sudden, Drew Holiday hits a 3. They get a steal, a breakaway for a Zion dunk. They get another stop. JJ Redick hits a 3. Brandon Ingram hits a mid-range jumper. It's getting a little tighter. And then, like, it's a 3-point game inside of 2 minutes in Staples, where if the Lakers lose this, the Pelicans only have to win one more to upset LA.
Sure, there's tension. There's no question that there's tension. It's just, is it really in the end a good thing? Like, were we really excited in March Madness? We're so excited on Thursday when, you know, the number two seed gets upset or the number three seed. But we always forget that that means that Saturday you end up getting some terrible team that gets smoked in the next round because they actually shouldn't have won that first time. They just got lucky. And to me, I it's a lot of fun for that little bit of adrenaline. But I like the NBA too much. And I like the idea of you play this 82-game season to have your positioning. And then you almost always crown the best team. At least you always crown the best healthy team, I should say.
Yeah, and like I respect that. It's just I'm at the point where I'm like, I'd rather have better, funner champions than the best team, because the best team is most likely going to be the Lakers 9 out of 10 times.
Well, that's probably true too, actually. Yeah. Do you think what's the best team? Maybe real quick before we go to break, but what do you think is the best like not championship caliber team that might have won a championship in this best of three format of yours? If every round was, I'm trying to think back to like the 2007 Warriors. You know, as a that type of team that you could maybe see them upsetting teams if that was the format.
I think the Suns get a title if this is the format.
Oh yeah, I like that one. Yeah,
I think
they might have a
Nash
couple.
And Amari, I think Nash and Amari could have won 2 out of 3. They couldn't win 7 versus the Spurs because of the hijinks of Robert Horry. So they're a candidate. I think there are a lot of teams that. I guess here's the difference: is like. I think it helps teams in Denver's tier. Like Denver specifically this year would be very vulnerable, but in Denver's
tier. No, but they wouldn't be vulnerable. I think it would actually even help them this year. Because like you said, again, because Denver wasn't one of the best teams. So anytime you can make the variance higher, they have a better shot.
Right. And that's kind of the thing, right? It's like it increases their odds of a championship. It just also increases the odds of them going out in the first round. But like, I'm trying to think of like what teams are in this tier this year. Like the Celtics, I think, are a great team this year. To look in that capacity, like they're a team that could absolutely, and I thought they could make the finals anyway before our suspension.
I did too.
But like, you know, I think if we look back, there have been a lot of really good teams that I thought, oh, the Clippers from like the Lob City Clippers, absolutely.
Well, I even think teams like the Paul George's Pacers that push the Heat, you know, like, you know, you never know. If it's only three games, you never know what happens.
Yeah, so this is like, this is the thing is like, I think that there's a middle ground to be found between the best team always wins and you have no shot and anybody can win anytime, even the best. Because like, that's part of it is... It would help those teams in that mid-tier because even if the Lakers got upset, the Clippers would be like, wait, all we got to do is go through the Pelicans? All right. Yeah. We can do this. Yeah.
Let's take a break. On the other side, the final segment, we're going to talk about just kind of do a quick review. It's weird to do a review, Matt, because we don't know if the season's over. I think we both think it is, but we're going to do a review of the season anyway, because even if it returns, it'll almost feel like a new season. So we're going to do a season review, and we're going to start with Nikola Jokic, talk about some of the highlights of the season, and then just talk about, you know, what went right, what went wrong for him. We'll be right back. Back here on the Locked On Nuggets podcast with my co-host Matt Moore, senior NBA writer of the Action Network. All right, highlights from this season, Matt. When you think of Nikola Jokic, what maybe 4, 5, 6 plays come to your head when you think of his season? If you were just to reduce it to the best moments,
when we look back and we look at when Jokic's season started in December, we find that. I think there's just been like a lot of plays. No, I don't get a single chuckle out of that.
Sorry. I thought you were being serious. That's why I was like, yeah, it just started in December.
It did start in December.
It's like, yeah, it's too real to be a joke.
That should be the running joke if they have to start the season in December. It's like, oh, good news for jokes.
That's true.
Then anyway.
Yeah.
You know, all the game winners... The only game winner that, like, really, to me, has stood out, because, like, the Sixers winner was really, like, crazy and chaotic. The Wolves game was early on, and it was in that stint where he won that game, and I was kind of like, so basically, like, you screwed around and put them in a position where they almost lost, and then we're just like, okay, I'll, like...
Those games were back-to-back.
Yeah.
Those games were in a row. So he hits the Philly one, and he has 16 points in the fourth quarter of that game. And then he goes to Minnesota and basically replicates it with with another game winner. So yes, those ones were back to back.
But like
in the bad part of the season too, November.
Like you when you're watching that, you're just like, I can't believe they're losing this game. Like, how are they playing this badly? Like, where the hell is Joker? And then just like Joker's like, okay, I win now. It's good. I won game. And
what I'll forever remember that game is that I was watching it on a stream, and it was like 30 seconds behind. And everybody's tweet, the entire timeline was just LOL or ha 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 ha. And I knew exactly what happened before. Yeah. It was like, oh, Joker must have hit another game winner.
But the one that to me really like does stand out is the Sombor shuffle on Gobert.
That's interesting that one is more memorable to you.
Because for me, that was such a big, like, to get back to our previous conversation, if you want to know the games that I really think they can get rid of are the interconference games, because they just don't mean anything. Mm. There's no rivalry. There's no tension. There's no personal stuff.
It'd be such a drag, though, like if you never got to see, you know, LeBron versus Kobe. Not even in the regular season, you don't get to see that. Only if they make it in the finals.
Like the league wouldn't want that, but I'm just like, yeah, because that means that if you get to see it in the finals, it's amazing. They finally get to play each other. It's brand new, and they don't have tape on each other. Because, like, part of it is everyone's like, yeah, but you get to see, like, Giannis versus LeBron. I'm like, they don't guard each other anyway because it's the regular season. They duck each other.
Yeah,
like,
that's true.
That's the problem. But the Gobert shot, for him to have gotten his absolute tail kicked by Gobert in the last time that they faced each other, and then to come into the season and be like, nope, I'm going to whip your ass all over the court and just absolutely demolish Rudy the way that he did was really impressive. Like, he just took over that game and absolutely wrecked him. And Rudy was so frustrated. And to hit that shot, the high arcing one, it's like his shot. That to me, it's in Pepsi Center. That to me was the one that kind of stands out this season in terms of the game winners. The touchdown pass to Harris was one of those moments of like being able to remember. He doesn't get to do as much of the stuff that he used to. And I think a lot of it, the reasons, like, you know, I've talked about the offense and this, that, and the other, and players getting hurt and that degrading things and the stagnation, how much tape there is on the guys and how they don't have counters to the counters. But I also think a lot of it is, like, I think some of it is that Joker just doesn't try as much anymore. Because he told me when I did that thing with him where I sat down and asked him to go through it, like, he actually made mention. He was like, eventually I won't be able to try all this stuff.
Why?
Like, he knew that eventually, like, he would have to peel back a little bit on just, like, I'm going to see if I can pull this off. And he can't do that as much anymore because they're trying to win a championship. Mm. But like these little moments where he goes for something wild and it works are still the most thrilling moments. If I were a Nuggets fan, they would be the best.
Yeah. To me, all those games count. And I think for the Philly game winner, because I was at Pepsi Center for that one, and there's something to being at the arena for the experience that makes it just five times better. But the other one was the away Utah game, which happened just a week after the Sombor shuffle game winner you're talking about. And that was maybe the highlight of the entire season for the Nuggets, that seven players at the end of like this ridiculous stretch where they were playing back-to-back nonstop. That game itself was a back-to-back on the road, and them to get the win. And then that was one of, to me, that was in a vacuum. Again, this is my catchphrase apparently, but in a vacuum. So it wasn't playoffs, didn't really have that high of stakes, but I still think that might have been maybe the best game of Jokic's career, maybe at least top five. 30 points, 21 rebounds, 10 assists on Rudy Gobert, and then just dominant performance playing almost the entire game. So to me, that was the high. That was probably the best moment. But let's talk about the review for him, because this to me is a weird season from Jokic. There was growth. I think no doubt he was a better player at his best this year than he was last year. We didn't get to see him in the playoffs. I mean, he was so great in the playoffs that we just have to put that aside. But if we just look at the regular seasons, I think his highs were way high. Well, not way higher, but they were noticeably higher. But he had two lows that were, you can't overlook. The first month of the season, as we talked about, and then also this last like seven games out of the All-Star break were just really weird from him, where he kind of regressed. So to me, I almost give him like a B, not even like a B plus, but just a B for this season because of how much of it was underwhelming.
Yeah, people were surprised that we didn't like cape harder for him for All-Star or talk about, like, you know, I think here's what's insane is, like, I do think it was a B season. I still think he was first team All NBA.
Right. Yeah.
Like, there wasn't a better center. There wasn't. There was, like,
well, and because, like, Gobert, you know, or Gobert didn't necessarily have the best season. Neither did, you know, all the other guys. Yeah, Embiid missed a ton of time.
I don't think Rudy's getting any awards.
Right.
After
oh, geez.
It's going to be hard to generate media love for Rudy Gobert, poor guy. But, like, I do, but, like, yeah, he's been clearly, like, he's been better than Embiid. He just has been. Yeah. And Embiid's been hurt, but he also was better than him, even healthy. I think I was really hard on him that first 2 months because, like, I think he has to give more. But I think also part of it is as the year went on and hearing the comments from the players, like, I just got the sense, and, you know, I talked about this a lot. It's just this team was really geared toward let's just be ready for the playoffs. Let's get ourselves a top four seed so we got home court in the first round. Tops, you know, if we get home court in the second round, great. But let's be ready for the playoffs.
Where I disagree with that, because I'm with you, and I was there on February 12th, the last game where they lost to the Lakers, but the last game going into the All-Star break. But there were 10 games they played post All-Star break, and he kind of looked like he went back that way. If you look at his numbers, he didn't score 20 points in any of the last five games of the season. And he just kind of, we talked about it. I mean, we didn't know the season was going to end the way it did, but we kind of talked about it like, oh, it looks like he's going through another emotional funk.
See, I don't even necessarily know if he was emotional this time, because I felt like he was still engaged. He looked fatigued. I think not conditioning, because that's an overblown and very stupid thing that people talk about.
Mentally fatigued, maybe.
Yeah, I will say this. I really do think that All-Star is bad for him.
Yeah, I actually agree with this take. It is, like, funny, but I think it's true.
I just really think All-Star is bad for him. I think he's gotten better at handling it. Like, he knows this is part of it. Right. Yeah. And, like, there are probably incentives in his contract that if he gets All-Star, he hits. And so it's like he's not going to not do it. But, like, I just think that he would have done a lot better if he just had the week to go have quiet.
Yeah.
You know, I wonder a lot of the time about where he's at on the Myers-Briggs. Like, I wonder where he's at on.
Yeah.
On introvert, extrovert, and how much emotional energy.
I think he's introverted, don't you?
I do too.
Yeah, like, he has the funny personality, and he's good with, like, in little bits and sound bites, but I think he actually just doesn't want to be around anyone, other than the small group of people he really knows.
And I think it's actually really, I think it's emotionally taxing for him.
Yeah,
totally. I think basketball is easy. Not easy. I think basketball is comfortable for him.
Yeah.
I think that dealing with press and media and meetings and social environments and the dynamics of being a team leader. Well,
that leads me to an interesting question, because I talked about this, I think, on the DNVR Nuggets podcast, or maybe I can't remember who I was talking about it with, but I think he would really do well to have a Damian Lillard type or a Chris Paul type, just somebody that, in my opinion, is probably not as good as him. That he can still be the best player, but there's somebody that's close enough to that mark to be the leader that even he is like, yeah, no, that's the leader, man. That's our guy.
I don't know that I can say – it's not that it can't work. I just do not have, off the top of my head or in any recollection, a sense of a team where that was the dynamic, because typically every time that you have the guy is the best player, but he, like, this is actually, like, a really good comparison is Harden. Harden's the best player, but he's always like, I don't really want to be like the rah-rah, like, let's get in line, you know, come on, guys, let's go get this, get your heads in the game. He doesn't want to do that. And so, like, he's passive-aggressive as hell, which is why he had trouble with Dwight, because Dwight's also passive-aggressive. And it was why he had trouble with Chris Paul, because Chris Paul is not passive-aggressive. He's aggressive-aggressive. And so, like, that's one of the things I think that maybe that's why he wanted Russ. Russ was a guy that he could feel like was better than him, that
maybe,
even though it wasn't, but like that kind of dynamic. So I'm just trying to imagine a situation in which there's a guy who's clearly the voice in the locker room, I think, has to be the guy.
What about Dwayne Wade and LeBron in 2012?
So that was a transformative year.
Yeah. That was a handing off year.
Yeah. And that was actually the first time that LeBron took the reins of that team. In 2011, it was Wade's. And even in 2013, like, it always felt like Wade's team. Like, whenever I covered those finals, it felt like Wade's team. Just because, like, the way the fans talked and the organization and just, like, the sense. But 2012 was the one where LeBron entered with such a different attitude and started, like, really reshaping everything in terms of, like, what he wanted. And he learned a lot in 2012 and 2013 about that. And then 2014 was mostly cruise control. And then when he went to Cleveland, he had learned all that and he tried to implement it there. And there were successes and failures there. But I think, like, I do think that, like, let me put it this way. If LeBron had not adjusted and taken over the lead the way that he did, I don't think it would have worked. I just don't think he can. In my opinion, I don't think that the best player can be this is like the alpha. I wrote about this in the summer when I did superstar duos and trios. Like, I looked at it historically, and the data was really fascinating because I looked at win shares and all these classic teams, like the Bird, Parrish, McHale Celtics. There was always the best guy, and then there was a guy that could be the best guy but was willing to be basically the beta. And then, like, the third guy just did, like, the dirty work. And, like, the alpha beta stuff gets, like, wrapped into toxic masculinity and, like, cuck talk and the incels.
Yeah,
and all
it's
that.
Like one of my least favorite ways to talk about sports.
It's really bad. It's I'm very open with how bad it is. The reason I bring it up is just from I do think that there is a I try and think about it in terms of, because, like, I have a background in social psychology. And so what they found a lot in leadership psychology is, like, there is, like, that kind of sense of it's hard to have co-leadership without one being very clearly at the top. And so I think that there are complications that are derivative of having that kind of a model.
Yeah, I disagree. I think that, look, basketball, we overcomplicate basketball all the time. Often the best player is the team with the best player wins a lot. I mean, LeBron's at the finals every year. Kobe was in the finals. Tim Duncan was in. I mean, sometimes I think we overcomplicate it. So to say, like, well, it never happens, it's like, yeah, well, you got to kind of have, like, one of the top three or four guys. If you think that Jokic can be that guy, and I think that's still an if. I think we've seen him play at that level for a regular season, but have we seen him do it in a playoffs where it's like, oh, that's one of the guys where he's just going to win? We haven't seen it yet. But if he is one of those guys, I do think it could work. Again, and we're not talking about some scrub. We're talking about a Damian Lillard or a Chris Paul type, like another top 10 player capable of being a top 10 player for a playoff run. To me, I just think that might work. And I don't know. Maybe it wouldn't. But
you know what comparison I'm going to bring?
Which one?
I'm going to go back to the well again. He needs a Jason Terry.
Could be. I mean, yeah. First of all, the Dirk Jokic comparisons, I think, are there. There's a million reasons that I think they work. Not just because they're both European, but I mean, even personality wise. So the Dirk stuff is so fascinating because I've always said this, but whenever a guy wins, the narrative on their whole career gets rewritten. And it's like, well, Dirk was this winner and it just needed to, like, no, he had to learn the lesson. He had to grow as a leader and as a socialite, he had to grow.
It became one of the truly great guys in the NBA. In 2007, everybody thought of him as, like, the villainous guy that was, like, he was on top. Like, when you're chasing him when they're on top, they look, you know, the people are always like, he's not that good. Yeah. He's not that good. And they did the same thing with LeBron. He's not that good. Right. And they win. Everybody's like, he's just great. Isn't he great? Look how great he is. You got to respect how great he is.
You know, I'm glad we didn't do that with Paul Pierce. That's the one player I'm glad that never happened.
Patrick Mahomes won the Super Bowl. I don't have to deal with any of that nonsense.
It's so true.
He's just there now. I think, but yeah, I do think that there's a chance for Joker as he gets older for him to really become that guy. And for him to just be like, even if it's not, he doesn't have to be rah-rah intensity. He doesn't have to be Mamba mentality. He doesn't have to be barking out orders. It can just be professionalism and focus. And, like, that's part of it is this is a transitionary year, I think, between super fun Jokic and professional Jokic.
Ooh,
and
I like this.
They're not – it's not that joy isn't always going to be a necessary component because it still is. Like, the Warriors were professional – but they still had joy. But there also was a shift between, like, the 2013 Warriors and even the 2015 Warriors and the 2017 Warriors. Like, those are three very different teams. And so I think there will be a shift between the fun Jokic and the professional Jokic. And I think that as he gets more comfortable, and like part of it is the fun stuff won't be as fun because you just kind of grow out of it. And then a lot of it also is just going to be, he will reach a point, I think we've learned about his competitiveness, where he will reach a point where he's just like, I want to win.
I think he was getting there, and that's one of the things that I'm so, you know, obviously disappointed in the season for a million different reasons, but that was one of them, is because I really felt like that last 10 games, sort of aside, because I felt like he was going to come out of that. I always felt like it was temporary. Yeah. But he did, you know, working on his body and just being more, so that you're talking about, where he just seemed a little bit more driven, a little bit more hungry, and with something to prove, and we didn't see that necessarily in previous years. And also, you know, he had these ups and downs. Like, his whole career has had ups and downs, where it's like, oh, he's in a funk now. Oh, now he's motivated and having fun or whatever. But when it push came to shove, 2 years ago, the last six games when Denver had to go on the run and they won 5 out of 6 and almost won the sixth one in game 82, and he played great in all of those, some of his best basketball of the year. And then the playoffs last year, some of the best basketball, if not the best basketball of his career. It's so hard to judge a guy when you know every year he kind of rises to whatever occasion. You know, he brings his best at the biggest moment, and we didn't get to see that. Instead, we actually ended the season on a down, and it's just it leaves a bad taste in your mouth, and it kind of makes you, I think it makes me at least, sort of tough to assess his year.
I will say I'm hopeful, and then I do think the rest will do him good. I think the rest will do Jamal Murray good. I think the rest will do Gary Harris and Will Barton and Paul Millsap good. I also think there's a very good chance that there's a flip side of this, is like, if the season's canceled, like, I think a lot about like how much the teams that are playoff teams are going to be like, we have to go do this all again. Like, we have to go, like, there's no playoffs. Everything that we had saved ourselves for is gone. And now we got to go through this entire 6 month season again.
I know. Yeah.
That's Oof. Brutal. Yeah. But I also think that there's going to be, especially from like the things that the players are posting on social media, I think there's also going to be a moment of like, I really miss this. Like, I miss my job. Like,
yeah. Maybe a little not taking it for granted anymore. Maybe a little bit. Just, yeah. Even, but you know,
I'm hopeful of that as well. Like, I think the best thing would be to go ahead and have a truncated postseason and then a truncated regular season. I think that'd be the best outcome for everybody.
Yeah. Including Jokic.
Including Jokic.
Do you think, let me ask you this, do you think, this is a crazy thing, but do you think Jokic is going to take nutrition and fitness and working out seriously going forward, or do you think it's like he'll have to get back into that groove at some point in the future?
Do you think in his apartment complex or his home there is a workout area?
I think he's still in an apartment, so yes, but not one that he can use.
So that's the question. Well, I don't know if he's in the country. He may have chartered a private flight home.
I think the league has requested that players all stay in the States.
That's true. They have. That's a great question, actually, is like, where is Jokic living? Yeah. Not that I want like the address. Just
right,
like,
right.
What's his situation?
Because it would for all these players that live in an apartment because they like the, you know, how easy it is and everything's taken care of for you and it's close or whatever. Like, if you're a professional athlete going through this chaos right now, you want a place with like 5 acres and you're really secluded and you have a giant facility and room to roam.
Yeah, like I would think. All I remember, for whatever reason, this has bounced through my brain, of I did an aggregation post on Tony Parker's house that he put up for sale in San Antonio, and it had a full court. It had a full court built into the yard with an awning that went over it in case you wanted to play in the rain.
the lifestyles of the rich and the famous. Yeah,
lifestyles. but yeah, like, that's a thing. So, like, I don't know. I mean, I think part of it is, like, I think Szyminski's probably like, hey, you need to do this and this and this and like really do this. And like, Joker, please don't do this. And like, Joker, please don't drink the soda, please, Joker. No. The league, I know this. I do know that players went to the facilities and picked up, at some of them at least, went to the facilities and got, like, the league and the teams prepared stuff for them. Like, yeah. Supplies.
Okay.
So, like, that would be my hope, is that, like, somebody was like, hey, Joker, here's like a, you know, here's like healthy foods for you to eat
right.
and stuff like that. But like, I don't, I think also just like, I think he's doing what I'm doing, which is like, I think he's playing a lot of video games. Like, I think Joker's playing like a lot of video games.
There's the scary truth and sad truth of all this is there's not a lot to do. I mean, I don't think for any, but no matter how much money you have, there's just not a lot to do right now. And, you know, maybe that turns into all these players just working out and trying to get shots up at their private facilities. I have
yeah,
no idea.
I mean, I think that's part of it is like, I think as time goes on, that guys will actually start working out because they'll just be like, I'm bored.
Yeah.
What else like working out is a great way to fill time.
Yeah.
Hmm. So I personally built an obstacle course today.
A ninja, American Ninja Warrior?
Similar? For children. Yes, yeah. Indeed. There was lava pits and a basketball to dunk.
Oh, wow.
It was three floors.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
I did a three-floor obstacle course for my kids today.
That's intense.
I'm trying every 2 days to do something. I'm basically doing some big parenting project with them every 2 days. So they have like normal stuff that they do every day, which is like, you know, quiet time, or my son's eight, we're working on reading or math. And then like my youngest is three, so we'll work on writing her name or like manners or whatever else, and you know, feelings and all that stuff. And like I took my son yesterday, we went for like a long walk on one of the trails here in Loveland. But every 2 days I'm trying to do like a big project. Maybe that's what Joker needs, is like every 2 days.
Well, first of all, I think there's a great chance that Jokic has set up a three-story obstacle course at his house as well. There's at least a decent chance.
I think there's a really good chance that he's built a gigantic blanket fort.
Yeah.
And he's just playing Call of Duty nonstop. Yeah. Like, that seems very likely.
Let's finish off with this one and then we'll get out of here. But has your opinion of Jokic's ceiling changed at all this
year?
Me neither.
Now, you took that stretch where he played, and like maybe this is one of those things that where you're just more in tune with the game than I am, and I'm not saying that sarcastically at all. Like, I think that that's possible, because like Malone kind of felt the same way, that he was playing the best basketball of his career back in January, and I thought it was the best basketball of his career, but it wasn't surprising because it was just like it was. Everything that he had shown last year, just with a little bit more edge to it. It was just
more
fun.
That's
it was sculpted.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, you're right. A little more edge.
It's definition, you know?
And versus confidence and swag and just a little bit more of like, oh, I'm okay. I'm the best guy tonight.
And so, like, I was really – my biggest thing is, like, I was really excited for his postseason.
I was too.
Because I thought there was a chance that he would get into the postseason and everybody would be like, I'm taking the Thunder over the Nuggets. Like, I don't think this Nuggets team is that good at all. And then Joker just destroyed everyone for two rounds. Like, I thought that was entirely possible.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll see it. And
the only area for me where I maybe reduce his ceiling a little bit is I hoped we would have seen a little bit more out of him as a vocal leader. And I would say I'm more, not that I've closed the door on this, but this was the year I kind of expected it. And I don't think that happened. I think he became more serious. All those things you talked about, a little more edgy or whatever. But I don't know that he ever stepped up and vocalized things. And I think one of the storylines of the season was that Jamal Murray started to.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's going to be like this big, long, painful process, I think, with him. Because, like, I thought we were past the I'm the best player on the team thing. And then he backslid. Yeah. And I just think that I think we're going to constantly be. I think it's going to take a while before he gets there, and maybe like three, four seasons. I don't know what it's going to take, but like he's going to have to at some point accept the responsibility of like, I'm the guy.
Yeah.
Like, I'm the guy. And there's nobody else, like, you know, it's like, well, we're going to do it together. Well, we're going to do it together, but you're going to have to do most of it. That's how the NBA is. And until I think he gets there, I think he's always going to be a little bit behind his ceiling. He's going to be up beneath his ceiling for as long as – now, there are problems with going to that level too. Like, you get impatient. Like, if it's all on you and you accept it's all on you, that means it's like you can't. It's hard to be a good teammate in that situation, because you also have to be. You have to hold everybody accountable while the whole world's holding you accountable. Like, that's all tough stuff. But it's also like the it's really the only way.
Maybe I was ahead of the curve. Maybe I was you know, expecting the leap this year in that regard, and maybe there's still time. I just, you know, I every year that goes by that it doesn't happen, I'd be less optimistic that it will. And this was a big one for me. I think that my confidence in him becoming that vocal type took a pretty big hit this year. But again, there's still time, and it's by no means a door closed. It's just an opportunity.
I also think the one thing to keep in mind is somebody was saying this about him, just about like somebody was raving about him the other day, just about how great he is. It was Russillo. Like Russillo was talking about how great he is, and just like, that might have to be enough. Like we keep waiting to find out like what his ceiling is, but like, it's important to at some point just be like, if this is all, that's okay. This is enough. Like this is still going to be, if not the best player in franchise history, then he's going to be in that conversation. Like,
oh no doubt about it.
I can make a case right now that Jokic is like the best player in franchise history.
Yeah.
You know, like even including Melo.
I don't even think that's very all that hard.
And Thompson and like all this. You know, longevity matters. Like, sure. You know, Melo did do it for what, 9 years? 7 years? 7 years. That matters. Like he did it for 7 years. That matters. But you know, I just think that Joker has turned around a team almost all on his own, and like I think he's absolutely a better player than Melo was in his prime. People would disagree with that, but I that's what I think. And he will, you know, he's not going anywhere. He's going to wind up unquestionably. Like if it's a question now, it's like arguable, but like in the end, it won't be.
Yeah.
And you know, that's a step in the right direction, and that's going to have to be good enough, and then you know maybe things work out, and maybe things work out is definitely a message I think all of us need to hang on to right now.
Well, Matt, it was good to talk hoops with you, man. I think it's kind of important. I know everybody, we're 2 weeks into this thing now, or 10 days, 11 days, whatever it's been. And I think as much as it's important to be focused on the actual important things and to keep, you know, be mindful of all of that, I also think it's important for us to kind of have our lives back. And it was, we talk hoops at least once a week, if not 2, 3, 4 times a week, usually during the season, and we haven't for 2 weeks. So it was nice to do that again.
Yeah, it's good to hear your voice, man. I'm glad that you're safe and the family's okay and doing well. If you're listening to this podcast, I'm relatively certain that you're doing the things that we need to be doing to keep everybody safe. I hope you all are hanging in there. We've got tough times ahead of us, and just know that like we're here to listen and we're here to give you a distraction. And I think one of the cool things has been just this situation has made a lot of people realize how much we need each other. And that's been the most powerful and affirming thing to come out of a truly horrible, horrible time in the global lifespan.
I think, and maybe even increasingly so, just that realization of how dependent we are on not just ourselves, but on everyone.
I miss everybody. Like I miss Vic. I miss Vic, and I miss Jenna, and I miss Harrison, and Harrison calling games before, and I miss Dove, and I miss TJ making all sorts of jokes. I don't miss Brendan.
Yeah.
Don't miss Brendan at all. Yeah. But everybody else, I miss a lot.
Well, it's good to hear from you. Everybody, thanks so much for tuning in. We're going to be back again, I believe, on Wednesday with a brand new episode reviewing another player, probably Jamal Murray, if I go in order here. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you next time.